today on the Monocle Weekly Edition 87, we're in Seoul, where we'll be hearing the latest on Korean international relations.
From the Chinese perspective, hey, you make money from us, but you're in love with the United States. What are you going to do? You know, our ability to handle what we have with China is really critical.
That was Professor Jong Kung Choi of Yonsei University here in Seoul. And we'll be asking what legacy, if any, the title of World Design Capital 2010 has left on the city of Seoul.
Design is one of the fundamental strategies for Seoul at this moment. Everyone should be a designer to design a new Seoul.
That was Dr. Kyung-won Chung, deputy mayor of the city of Seoul. And ahead of this week's Korean Music Awards, we'll be reviewing the shortlist with leading music producer Jay Chong and hearing something like this.
To share mon amour, 끝이 없는 내 기다림. To share mon amour, 이젠 그만두려 해.
And now, the Monocle Weekly.
Hello, it's Sunday, February 20th, 2011, and you're with the Monocle Weekly here in Seoul with me, Tyler Brulé, design editor Hugo MacDonald, and very special guest of the Monocle family, Bernie Cho. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Hugo, I guess we have to, in the interest of full disclosure, say that you're a Seoul virgin, aren't you?
I am a Seoul virgin. It's my first time.
Impressions so far? Because, you know, the show's come from Tokyo many times and Stockholm and New York and Washington, D.C. But
well, I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. I turned up thinking it might be, like people say, Tokyo 15 years ago. And it's very different to anything that I think anybody could describe.
Well, the journey started on the Korean Air flight, didn't it? Because the first one, I don't think you'd even taken off. And Hugo was talking about the Foray uniforms.
Gianfranco Foray did the uniforms for Korean Air's hostesses, which I hadn't actually realised. And I was looking at them from behind thinking what nice uniforms they were wearing. And then one brushed past and it has Gianfranco Foray monogrammed on the bottom of it.
Oh, there you go.
I know. That's amazing. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Okay. So maybe I was just a bit behind.
Yeah.
But that was where it started. And then pretty much since then it's been on the roads. As in stuck in traffic.
Yeah, that is a bit of a problem. We can probably spend a bit of time with that. Or maybe I know that you certainly chatted a little earlier in the week to the deputy mayor.
Exactly.
Did you? Are we going to hear that?
Well, we are. He's very optimistic and says that the bus routes are being laid throughout the city, but I'm yet to see any evidence of it making a huge difference.
How do you? I know you have a very nice, rather small car, but does that get you from A to B any faster, Bernie?
It does, but the thing is that I think when it comes to driving in Korea, I think red lights are sometimes relative. I think here driving is sometimes very much like a video game. But that being said, mass transit here is actually quite well done. The subways here are very immaculate, clean, impeccable, and on time. So, usually when people moan and groan about the traffic, they'll more than happy recommend taking the subways here. And I recommend it too.
It works very well when you're on it, but then you get off and you get out and it's not a particularly pedestrian-friendly city, I don't know.
Oh, the rush.
The rush and the lack of pavement signs.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I'm keen to, it's probably a whole separate documentary that we could do, but I always think that's one thing when you try to, and I've spent enough time in Seoul now, and people, you know, they ask, you know, as you said, some people talk about, you know, is this Tokyo 20 years ago? Not quite sure of that, because you know, there are some fundamental issues of scale. I mean, just the width of the roads. I'm not sure if they were designed to land aircraft on them or not. I sometimes have the feeling they probably were. It is quite massive. And it'll be interesting to see when, you know, I get the current mayor sort of talks about, you know, this more, personable city, et cetera. There are some real issues of scale that need to be overcome.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. I mean, one of the things I've noticed about living in the city for now over 15 years is how much greener it's gotten. The air is cleaner. There's more trees. And actually, as bad as the traffic is, it was actually worse.
Really?
Yeah, if you can believe it. So for me, you know, when I hear you guys moaning, oh, it took me 40 minutes, I'm like, wow, that was fast.
Hugo, you'll be spending some time talking to the mayor about the whole design initiative and what 2010 has meant to the city. And, you know, the one thing I've noticed, and Bernie, it is true, I mean, the rapid transformation of, let's say, just the approach in from either Incheon or if you come in from Gimpo Airport as well, even, you know, as recently as 4 years ago, it was a pretty ugly drive. But, you know, someone got out there, you know, with the spade and they, you know, started to plant trees and there's nice flowers in the springtime, et cetera. Do you think that the broader design discussion has really sort of penetrated other corners? Because I also remember going into Korean offices even 4 years ago thinking, oh my goodness, do people actually, you know, put in whatever, you know, 9 to 7 on this floor? And so you've really sort of seen, it feels like the message is getting across, or am I just being naive?
No, I think all around, Korea's sort of aesthetic and sensitivity to design savvy has really spilled over in many ways, shapes and forms, in the sense that it's from products, from cars to phones to TVs, and it spills over now to buildings, to architecture, to interior design. And so I think right now, Korea, in a really good way, is sort of obsessed with good design. Mm. And because they know that not only does it look good, it feels good, but it's attractive, not only on an aesthetic level, but for business reasons. Mm. It's a great way to attract tourism, and it just looks good.
What have some of the revelations been? I mean, I know you've only been on the ground for about 72 hours, Hugo, but aside from that, we've maybe been a little bit sort of negative about the traffic, but it is a reality. But I'm wondering, people that you've met so far, and just things you've seen.
There's an overwhelming sense of optimism amongst a younger generation of architects who feel like they can work very closely with the mayor and the government to...
And you're talking about local architects, because
I think
I think that's one interesting thing when we speak to and you know we meet clients in this country, et cetera, that you know oftentimes they're looking across to Japan. I mean, there's a lot of you know Japanese you know who are working in this market, and yet if you ask me to name a Korean architect of global stature, it doesn't happen.
Understandably, the Korean architects are feeling a little hard done by. I was having dinner with the principal of Mass Studies, which is probably one of the most renowned architects.
Mr. Cho, I believe, is the one you threw down with. Yes, very
exactly.
Talented architect. He, in many ways, no pun intended, is almost a rock star.
And he was explaining how actually there are more architecture schools in Seoul than anywhere else in Asia. Any other city in Asia.
He would know better than me, but what I love about his design is not only is it funky, but his brother actually used to be an alt rocker. And so I got to know that designer.
He's not a family member that you're plugging.
No, he's not a family member,
the
yes.
The broader Cho clan.
There's the invisible handshake. But no, it's interesting is... he was very established architect who made his name overseas and has come back to Korea. And it's really interesting that he's been able to take whatever he's been able to amass overseas, and he set up Mass Studies here.
As a Korean who's you know obviously spent a lot of time in the U.S. as much as here, has it changed within the Korean nuclear family? Is it acceptable for the son or daughter to go off to fashion school now, likewise to go to architecture school, where, you know, if I think back sort of 25 years ago when I was in high school, you know, all my Korean friends in Toronto, you know, they were bound for either med school or law school. That was it. Has that changed?
I think so. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that a lot of younger Koreans have seen sort of successful role models in these non-traditional fields. And I think, again, because Korea has become such a developed country, the parental mindset in terms of career aspirations, I wouldn't say it's become more liberal, but I would maybe go so far as to say it's become more progressive.
Mm.
And so I think in terms of what are considered acceptable careers that children can now pursue, I think Korean parents now are more open-minded in terms of what that might be. And it's great that people in the creative fields, whether they be artists, entertainers, architects, designers, pretty much can hold their weight and hold their own in a cocktail party with doctors, lawyers, and businessmen.
But it had to happen, didn't it, Hugo? Because if you've got hungry beasts like Samsung, like LG, and certainly you know, Hyundai and Kia, they can't just rely on hiring international designers, though.
No,
they have a lot working for them, but there had to be
homegrown names as well, and endless opportunities. That's the other thing that really strikes me about being here is there's a real can-do spirit, it seems. It's quite similar to Finland.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. From the people that I've spoken to, it seems that things happen very, very quickly. People can sign and everything gets put in motion.
Well, it's also just when you look at, I think, the rate at which things are growing. We were talking to one of the, you know, when most department stores around the world are really crying the blues, and people are saying, you know, the concept of the department store is dead. And if they're optimistic, they're just saying it needs severe, you know, reinvention and surgery. The Korean stores are just, you know, plowing ahead, you know, with double digit, you know, we're talking almost 20% growth year on year, which is just, it's not happening anywhere else.
I think the secret to their success, and I know this firsthand because I was there last night, they're open late.
Well, they're open late, but I think also, you know, again, and, you know, we don't mean to sort of go back to Japanese references, but, you know, I always sort of think that, you know, it is the Mitsukoshis and the Isetans. If I think of, you know, the stores that do it well, they do it well on service. And I always feel it's the one thing that brand Korea doesn't talk up enough is that, you know, at the top end, you know, service is remarkable. Mm. I think what the airlines have achieved in this country, if you look at the top hotels, you know, no one talks about Seoul, though, the way people talk about Hong Kong and they talk about Bangkok and they talk about Tokyo. But when I think about the best properties here, I mean, the level of service is truly remarkable.
And, you know, what's really interesting is it could be a vocabulary issue, because in Korea, when you actually are asking for a bonus or a discount or extra stuff thrown into the mix, actually the word they use is service. So the idea is that service is actually something that's considered standard. Mm. Mm-hmm. It's something people expect. They want that little extra more.
Right.
And so I find it interesting, because when I first heard the term when I came here, I was like, why is service considered extra? But the longer I live here, I realize that that's something they expect, that's something they demand, and that's something that they usually get.
Mm. Well, that's enough shop talk for now. We should perhaps turn our attention north of the border, where the first talks between North and South Korea since the shelling of a South Korean island last November broke down last week, with President Lee Myung-bak seemingly taking a more hardline stance with the North than his predecessors. What does the near future hold for South Korea and its neighbors to the North, and with international relations within the region in general? Joining us now in the studio is Professor Jong Kung Choi of Yonsei University here in Seoul. Welcome.
Thank you.
In terms of the daily political narrative that has to happen within South Korea, if you're sitting in the foreign ministry here, I'm wondering how much of a day-in and day-out distraction Pyongyang becomes and how much it really inhibits South Korea's role on a wider international stage when perhaps diplomats could be focusing on other interests elsewhere.
Well, I guess that's a very good question. I've been teaching in university for the last 4 years, and I always told my students, what would have happened if we had no North Korea, especially people like me, international relations scholars and security guys? Because for the last 20 years, since the beginning of this nuclear fiasco, we've been so consumed by North Korea. When we actually try to develop our country and go globalization or whatnot, but we have this big black ball sitting right in front of us and consuming all these energies. And, you know, North Korea is, we call it, at least in my generation, we call it bad cousin. You know, my former generation would say bad brothers and whatnot, but we got more distant away because it's cousin concept. And what are you going to do when your cousin is really delinquent? You know, you cannot kill them, right? But you have to induce a rather comfortable circumstances under which he can, you know, gradually change. Mm. But since the beginning of this administration, we've been taking really hardliner. In other words, one might call it containment policy. We have set on a lot of prerequisite for talk. Unless you denuclearize, then we're not going to talk, you know, sort of. And then also they have two bad behaviors, you know, shelling of Yeonpyeong and the sinking of our warship, Chunan. And I don't know if it will be really a nightmare for the Minister of Foreign Affairs and Minister of National Unification, because they cannot do much. So it will be really a nightmare ongoing.
But how much does it inhibit things when, yeah, if you're sitting in the foreign ministry, when you could be getting on with, you know, obviously strengthening ties further with Jakarta, you know, making sure that your interests in East Africa are being looked after more? Yeah, I wonder how much of a distraction it is.
Well, you need to essentially measure the energy spent by our foreign minister. Mm. In other words, basically human resource allocations pretty much concentrate upon sort of Northeast Asian affairs. That includes our affairs with China and Japan, obviously. A lot of human resource allocated onto our management of alliance with the United States, so that we don't spend much good amount of money, a good amount of resources up onto Southeast Asia, for example, or Africa, where abundant of resources are allocated. But on the other hand, you know, I think South Korea is really amazing in a sense that with the very limited resources, we're trying to outreach, because Middle East is really important for South Korea, because, you know, we are essentially importing 99.99% of oil from Middle East anyway. That's why we've been sending a lot of troops there to sort of gear toward, you know, stability in the region, whether you agree or not. But, you know, So a lot of distraction from North Korea.
I want to come back to Korean affairs, particularly as it pertains to interests abroad, and touch on the spectacular assault against the pirates very far off the coast of Somalia. But before that, Bernie, when things flared up with the shelling of the islands, you know, was that a moment here when you were on the street in Seoul and people really sat up and said, okay, things are heating up, we have to pay attention? Or was it just the delinquent cousin on a binge again and you just have to move on, you know, get on with it?
You know, I like Professor Choi's analogy of the bad cousin, because if I had known this as a political sort of theory when I was in grad school, I wouldn't have failed out. but, you know, that being said, and it's ironic because I actually failed out of your grad school, so everything comes full circle. But what's interesting is that I think in Korea, in South Korea, people live day to day with this idea that there's a threat from the North, but they don't often take it seriously in their day to day affairs. And what was interesting was when I was just working that day, you know, I figured, oh, there's some...
You were looking for the closest basement?
You know, honestly, I didn't know it was a big deal, because I basically was just going about my business that day, and then people from overseas started calling me. It's like, what's going on? And are you in war? I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm just trying to get to the other side of the river. But I could see why they freaked out, because when you actually looked at the news footage, and if you don't know Seoul intimately... Mm-hmm. It looked like Seoul was being bombed, because it had a river, or it had a body of water, it had some mountains. It looked like the city of Seoul. But if you really knew where it was just way, way, way off the coast. So from an outsider from overseas seeing that on the news, of course people would freak out. But the reality was this is something, you know, the North and South are always having little scuffles at the border. But this one, for whatever reason, crossed the line, because unfortunately civilians got hurt. But based on what you see in the news, it did look startling. So I had to calm down a lot of friends and family saying, you know, this happens all the time. But if I looked at the footage, I could understand why people freaked out.
Mm. Professor, several weeks ago when there was the incident and the rather sort of heroic rescue of the Sanho jewelry, very, very far from where the Somali pirates go to bed every night. Was this, and how was that seen in Korea? Because, you know, certainly a lot of commentators, you know, said that this was something that Lee Myung-bak's government had to do. There needed to be some, you know, a spectacular adventure overseas. You know, who better to beat up than a bunch of pirates? And to pull it off, you know, without loss of life in terms of course, who they're rescuing. The pirates weren't so lucky. You know, was it a necessary PR exercise at this stage of his administration?
Basically, if you think like Korean Navy or Korean military, last year was a nightmare. You have a sinking of our warship. For the first time since the end of the Korean War, you have a bombing on our national territory. Therefore, it was a great victorious moment for the South Korean Navy, which I totally understand, however, because South Korea, for the last 10 years, we've been sort of pushing for so-called Blue Ocean Navies. Therefore, we would like to project our national capability up onto the very critical region we call the Middle East. Not only did we do that, but also we partook so-called international cooperation. In other words, we've been basically posting this area as a member of the international community. Therefore, we're projecting very, very constructive image upon the international community. But this time, why did we do this? I think that it was sort of diverging this so-called very negative public opinion about what our government is insufficient of. Therefore, we've essentially sort of bashed up these pirates and then successfully managed to rescue our ships and sailors. It's really hard to say, but I think it was a great timing for the Navy, which I really support anyway. So I think it's a good timing.
I just want to go back to your point on the more expeditionary ambitions of the Korean Navy. We've seen the Japanese have launched a vessel. I think they call it a helicopter destroyer, because I under the Japanese constitution, they're not supposed to have aircraft carriers. But I think if you actually held up a picture of this helicopter destroyer to anyone from sort of age 5 to 65 and said, what is this? They would say it's an aircraft carrier. And the Japanese are building another one. Where does Korea sit, particularly from a Navy point of view? Because obviously, the importance not just of the shipbuilding industry, but also the role that major players certainly hold in terms of shipping goods around the world. Korea is a main player. Korea has to be able to, you know, keep sea lanes safe. Really looking across over the horizon, as the Navy wants to do, are there big plans to, not necessarily that because Japan is an ally in many ways, but to certainly sort of match what's going on? And of course, we've heard about a keel being laid by the Chinese for an aircraft carrier as well. So what's happening at the shipyards in Busan?
If you are sort of military planner, in South Korea, especially Minister of Defense here. You're essentially fighting two uphill battles here, especially if you're a Navy guy, because, you know, for the last 5 years, we had two major naval skirmishes with North Korea. You don't need big Aegis destroyer for that. You only need very small-scale patroller that goes really fast and hit and run. On the other hand, you have to look at Japan and China, which are building up their Navy capabilities. So you don't want to essentially run your Navy with a very small patroller. You want to have something big. And also, you have a very limited budget. You know, you have limited money anyway. So you need to sort of max out whatever you have. We do have a lot of big ships being built for the last 5 years. And we only do that because we don't want to get into so-called spirals of conflict without ourselves being controlling. In other words, if there is a contingency between Japan and China, God forbid, however, but, you know, we want to sort of maintain our minimal defensive capability. That's why our Navy is building a new base, naval base in Jeju Island, so that, you know, we want to be in control. So we are essentially projecting not only Blue Ocean Navy, and also we also projecting Gray Ocean Navy containing and deterring North Korea. Understandably, you mentioned, you know, sort of what it may look like aircraft carrier that being built by Japanese. We have one that is bigger than what Japan has.
I knew that was coming.
So
you surprised me.
And also, what really surprises me is that, you know, Japan is essentially constrained by the peace constitution. But, you know, what we do not know is that they are building massively Japanese Coast Guard. The total tonnage of Japanese Coast Guard is bigger than total tonnage of Chinese Navy. So I don't know what to make of it.
I think a lot of people are going and checking their facts. I hear a clattering of fingernails on keyboards right now. But anyway.
Yeah. But I can say that because, you know, it's been published. But basically, I don't see much big spirals of conflict being, you know, built up between China and Japan. But however, if you're a little guy stuck in a big broad, two big guys, one that is the largest in the world and one is essentially, you know, third largest economy in the world, what do you want to do? You want to have at least minimal deterrence capabilities. Mm.
Hugo, just from an innovation point of view, and whether that means my aircraft carrier is bigger than yours, you're fresh on the ground here, but do you think that, you know, looking north of the border, that's also something that just keeps everyone on their toes when you look at the crater friction that's here?
I was quite surprised yesterday. I went on a trip to about 10 kilometers away from the North Korean border, and suddenly it becomes very visible that it is a very real threat, but the people that I was with were joking about it in every opportunity and telling anecdotes about people climbing over fences, and it was all a bit of a giggle. But I think, I mean, it is a real threat. It's a very visible threat, but people have learned to live with it and take it in their stride.
But do you think that's also what propels people forward, though, as well? I mean, when you look at the pace, and I think, you know, you really summed it up when I was asking for your first impressions. You talk about sort of, you know, the rawness, but just the sheer ambition here. And do you think in part, you know, one is also, you know, propelled forward because there is a threat?
Absolutely, because you're constantly on your toes. Mm. And you can't really stand still. You need to keep moving.
Bernie, would you agree? Is, you know, someone who's got to keep the plates and discs spinning?
You know, I think South Korea is a very scrappy country. I think in the sense that, you know, again, I love Professor Choi's analogies of the big brother here and the bad cousin there. But it does make a lot of sense in the sense that, you know, Korea has been surrounded by these huge countries and a threat to the North that I think a lot of South Koreans, because they live with these stark realities, they tend to be very innovative in some ways and, more importantly, very proactive in terms of just go, 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 except when it comes to traffic.
Yes, this is very true. Professor Troy, just before we go, if you look out next 18 months, what's you know, what will be the other areas? I mean, besides sort of the obvious Japan, China, what's happening, you know, in this quadrant of the world, but what else is going to be keeping this administration busy?
Apart from domestic political affairs, I think that, you know, our relationship with China is very much in trouble. Essentially, you know, the facts tells the truth, at least in my case, because we're making a lot of money from China. Japan and South Korea is the only country that makes, you know, a trade surplus with China. And from the Chinese perspective, hey, you make money from us, but you're in love with the United States. What are you going to do, you know? And China, we are trying to keep the region very stable by engaging North Korea. Now you're in a fair with the United States. What are we going to do? And essentially, our economy is so dependent and interdependent on the Chinese economy. So I think, you know, our sort of ability to handle or recuperate from what we have with China is really critical. And plus, we eat kimchi, right? Officially, we are a kimchi importing country from China.
This is another cocktail party trivia that you just dropped on us today.
I know, I was going to say, goodness.
So, you know, basically, America is very important. Its presence, I think, I have no doubt it is contributing to stability here. However, China, whether we like it or not, it's a rising power. And rising power doesn't necessarily pose threat all the time. It is also an opportunity. An opportunity to engage and maximize our national interests. And if we want to have this cousin being calmed down, you want to talk to its best friend, right? So I think our relationship with China is pretty important.
Great. Professor Jung Kun Choi from Yonsei University, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And you can find out a little bit more about North and South Korean relationships in the current issue of Monocle, where we are looking at what reunification might look like. That is in our March edition. You're listening to the Monocle Weekly. We're in Seoul. We're back in a moment. You're back with the Monocle Weekly here in Seoul. Well, last year, the city of Seoul carried the title of World Design Capital 2010. Now, as the focus begins to shift to Helsinki, the next World Design Capital, what legacy has been left behind and what happens next? Dr. Kyung Won Chung is the deputy mayor of the city of Seoul, and he spoke to our design editor, Hugo McDonald, earlier in the week.
Deputy Mayor, thank you for joining us. I'm wondering, in the wake of Seoul being the World Design Capital last year, what that position meant for Seoul and for Korea in general?
You may know that Seoul concentrated on a design policy to improve the visual aspect of Seoul as well as economic impact of Seoul. The World Design Capital project was very helpful for us to achieve both objectives. The impact of World Design Capital project was huge. For example, the brand value of Seoul raised $800 million because of the World Design Capital project. Another point is that Seoul Light realized the importance of design through the World Design Capital project. So that we are very proud about that.
And moving forward, how do you plan to integrate design more into how the city develops?
It's a very good question, because the Design Seoul aims to implant design thinking to the mind of civil servants. So it means that we want to raise the standard of all buildings and street and skylines or that kind of...
So it's about improving the quality of life, generally?
Yes, quality of life as well as the quality of environment. So that design is one of the basic fundamental strategy for Seoul at this moment.
And Mayor Oh has obviously been a very instrumental character in forming this design policy. He was re-elected last year for another 4 years.
Yes.
And how will you and he be working together over the next 4 years to keep this plan in place?
Actually, Mayor Oh is an initiator of Design Seoul project since his first term in 2006. In his inauguration speech, he emphasized that everyone should be a designer to design a new Seoul. After that, we organized the administrative organizational structure as well as to develop our vision, and we undertake a variety of activities. Through that kind of effort, the standard of design quality raised dramatically, so that we wanted to focus on fun design from now on.
Fun design being design that speaks to everybody in the city, not just...
Yes, design with an humor.
With humor.
Yes, so that the people can meet very interesting artifacts or very, very unique buildings.
So it's about getting people to talk about design and to engage with it.
Yes.
And Seoul obviously is becoming a beacon for, or an example of how design can be incorporated into official policy for cities around the world. Do you plan to lecture in various other cities about setting the example of how design can be achieved to raise the quality of life in the city?
Yeah, we already connected with so many foreign cities. Especially, we are planning for holding a UNESCO Creative Cities Network Summit coming November, so that all the mayors of UNESCO Creative City Network join together in Seoul to discuss how we can collaborate in terms of enhancing the quality of life through design.
Fantastic. And you've obviously been working quite closely with Finland as well, who Helsinki's World Design Capital next year.
Next to World Design Capital, yes.
Yeah. And yes. We were speaking to them recently and they were saying that they've learned a lot from you as well. So you set a great example for that.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Deputy Mayor, thank you very much for joining us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And that was Hugo McDonald talking to Deputy Mayor Kyung Wong Chung of the City of Seoul. You're listening to The Monocle Weekly. We're back in a moment. You're back with The Monocle Weekly in the Seoul, where it's time for some culture, and in the absence of Rob Bound, Bernie Cho is here with a special guest. I'm going to let you set him up, though, Bernie.
Okay. Well, it's no pun intended. He's probably one of the most solid guys I know in the music industry. And the reason I say that is he actually was in one of the first seminal R&B bands in Korea. Drum machine roll, please. They were actually called Solid. I'm here. We're actually all here with Jay Chong, who is not only a very prolific and famous music artist from back in the day, but more importantly, music producer.
But he's still relevant today, right?
Very relevant.
Okay, good.
That was many, many moons ago, but...
Yes. The good thing is we're on radio. If this was on TV, it'd be a whole different story. But what's very interesting about Jay is not only has he obviously made his mark on the Korean music industry here, but he's probably one of the movers and shakers on Korean music in Asia. He's probably one of the few producers who has probably as many, perhaps even more hits in places like Taiwan and Hong Kong that he does as well here in Korea.
So would you say, if I can jump in, that that Jay is you know, perhaps one of the biggest exporters? Because I know, you know, Bernie, from time to time we've talked about, you know, how is it that the Koreans became sort of, you know, the acceptable face of... And I'm sort of putting this in sort of, you know, quotations, you know, all over Asia, you know, embraced by the Japanese, embraced by the Chinese, embraced by, you know, kids in Bangkok. Are you the man responsible in part?
I think, you know, since the internet and there's so many outlets for music to get out. And I think the people have spoken is what it is. Hmm. The industry has shifted since the internet. People overseas are more now more exposed to Korean music. That makes a huge difference. As far as the music, I think it varies individually. I think my music is very different from other composers, obviously, out here. But I think overall, the general consensus is that K-pop is cool.
Mm. I mean, people talk about, you know, of course, you know, you only have to, you know, look over Hugo's shoulder in the office and you can see him, you know, practicing, you know, dance moves from the likes of Girls' Generation or 2PM. But you know, it's interesting. I mean, if you look at the sheer number, you just go to YouTube, you look at acts like that, and you see the sheer number of views that, you know, that these artists have. And it can't just be, you know, people here or the Korean diaspora, though there are many of you. I mean, this obviously, you know, it is people who are sitting in Kaohsiung and in Sydney and probably Brussels, too.
Definitely. I think, you know, Jay's probably had a bit of a hand in having how those artists kind of move and shake their booty because his beats are like that. But it is true. I think in many ways the internet has had a large hand in taking artists who went from being indie through the internet to go international. So it's become a very sort of seamless formula. And it's just been interesting that Korea has sort of taken this digital technology, made it into a digital culture, and has somehow figured out a way to make this pretty much part of the pop culture that's breaking out all over Asia.
I mean, we can focus on the sound, but you know, I think one thing which is interesting, you know, and I guess just the power of the visual, and there's something about, you know, the acts which, you know, upload themselves or end up on MTV or any number of networks around the world, where I think it's quite different. I mean, if you know, my view is if you look at J-pop, you know, J-pop has always sort of been quite controlled, and has always been the dancers and everything else, but the Koreans seem to understand sex.
Sexy, I think.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, maybe. Yeah, maybe not sex. But they really understand sexy,
yeah.
And kind of a. And I'm wondering, is that an influence of and a relationship with America? But you know, there is a certain sluttiness. I'm not sure if it's, you know, the Christianity in this country, but I've really been trying to work with it and try to figure out, you know, why is it that the Koreans have sort of given this, you know, heavy dose, you know, of sex in terms of presentation. Any takers?
Jay, I'm gonna let you take the first punch.
Man, okay. You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, sex sells to a certain extent, but
You don't see. Like, if I look at acts out of Taiwan, for example, or acts who I've seen, you know, let's say a Thai group or something, there's not that sense of knowingness and marketing that you get from Korea, and I'm wondering what it is. And
yeah, I think it's still done in relatively good taste.
Yeah, you have to defend it. It's fine. I'm just saying. No, the numbers speak for themselves. I mean, it is quite remarkable. But it's funny. There are so many similarities to J-pop in so many ways.
Yeah, I think.
But
it's,
the Japanese will. You step over a line, and, you know, good or bad doesn't matter. But
I mean, in the Asian culture, we've always been sort of conservative, traditional, and for the last, I guess, you know, ever since, you know, pop music's been on the scene, we've always known to create sort of the cute image of girls. And I think a lot of girls want to kind of break out of that and then sort of present the more modern, you know, sexy, if you will. But, you know, I think that's the new movement, you know.
Bernie, how do you distill it?
Well, what's interesting for me is, you know, I mean, I'm always been a big fan of Korean women, so I think, you know, whatever they do, they're sexy. I had to put that out there for the misses. But that being said, I actually think in terms of the sex appeal of Korean music, I've actually seen really the boy bands step up the game because, you know, I didn't even know what the term chocolate abs was until I had to look that up on the internet because they kept referring that to the...
Tell us.
Well, apparently it's because these guys are so ripped. They look like chocolate bars.
Okay.
And okay. So I was like, what is this term? I was like, why is this being thrown around with Korean, you know, male music acts? But the reality is, and I think it has a lot to do with marketing and promotions, is the fact that Korean music acts not only sound good, they look good. And part and parcel of that is the fact that a lot of these younger artists are working out, you know, as much as they concentrate on the choreography. I mean, these guys are ripped. And so what's really funny is that a lot of these Korean music acts, particularly the boy bands, the male acts, I mean, they've developed shirt allergies. They have no qualms live on stage. Boom, shirt, gone. And women across the region go crazy. And I get it. I see it. I understand it. It's definitely not me because, I mean, I have to concede I'm part of that older generation now. But compared to when, obviously, when Jay was an artist and doing well, and compared to what's out there now.
You haven't seen my chocolate abs yet.
No, I think it's just you've been eating too much chocolate, period.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Fried chicken abs.
But
yeah.
The point is that I think the sex appeal, and I do agree it's done somewhat risque, but tastefully so, that it makes Korean music, again, not only from an audio standpoint, but really from a visual standpoint, very appealing.
I mean, Hugo, wouldn't you say that, you know, aside from, you know, wanting to be a, you know, a personal trainer, you would do very well, you know, landing a few Korean boy bands as a client. But I think also you'd want to be in the cosmetics industry as well, because the boys certainly wear more makeup than the girls.
Definitely.
mean, we have a lot of, well, in a particular, you know, our new favorite obsession, which is, of course, just the choreography of the group 2PM, and but also the rather
mesmerizing.
It is, isn't
but
it?
But I don't know, something's happened in the last 6 months, because I've been aware in America and London and Paris, friends of mine who have switched on YouTube and showed me the latest video of some band from Korea. And I don't know if it's just that my friends have suddenly become aware of it or if something has changed.
Yeah, no, I've definitely sensed a generational change. When I'm on the road with some of these bands and I'm with my wife, she's asking them for eyeliner tips. And I know, wow, when she's asking guys for eyeliner tips, there's something going on.
It's great to talk about the number of views and the success these people have on the internet. When do we get to a place where you would see, you know, a major soft drinks producer, that you would just see a major global brand saying, you know, we're not just going to sign a Korean, you know, for a regional campaign, but this is going to be the global face of our business, and we're not talking, you know, this is not a job for, you know, for Hyundai or for Samsung, but that you would get, you know, an American or a European brand to do that. Is that day coming, or are we not ready for whether it's a Korean or Asian face yet?
I think we're well on our way. If anything, you know, I think the true results will come when the fan base is there, and, you know, the consumer base is there for Asian acts and Asian artists. you know, I believe that day is going to come very soon. I think sooner than we know.
Well, in a moment, I want to come back because I know that this coming week it's the Korean Music Awards, and Bernie, you're going to give us a bit of a preview. But you've got two songs for us today. I'll let you set the first one up.
Sure. I think this is a song that's interesting because it's actually got a French title, and I'm not even going to dare pronounce it because my French is terrible.
So anyway.
It's "Touché Mon Amour."
I think that was pretty good.
Okay. I think with a few more, you know, glasses of wine, I could get it right. But this is from a band called Winterplay. And they are nominated for in the Best Jazz/Crossover Album category. And Winterplay, the winter's almost over.
Well, we tried to get them on the winter series, but wasn't it the lead singer, he was getting married, and there was a honeymoon,
yes,
of some sort.
Exactly, yeah.
We couldn't get them to London.
And you know what? The great thing was is he was contemplating, do I go to my wedding or do I go to Monaco? And he actually debated, so that was a good thing.
I think we almost said, you know, we will pay for the honeymoon if you come to London. Anyway, wrong choice, but wish them all the best. Here's the song.
I don't want your love. I don't want you here. 나는 너에게 오래된 인형 Touché mon amour 끝이 없는 내 기다림 Touché mon amour 이젠 그만두려 해 I don't want you cold I don't want you round 나는 너에게
That was Winterplay with Touché Mon Amour. Very different sound because, you know, we were talking about, you know, the likes of Girls' Generation and Wonder Girls and 2PM, etc. This slightly sort of bossa nova, easy, loungy, you know, sort of sound, it reminds me a lot of what you hear in Tokyo at the moment. I always sort of say that sound sort of came from the whole, you know, Japanese diaspora in Brazil, and I'm not sure if that's the case. But is there a lot of that going on in the music scene?
Well, I think what's interesting is that when you do see a lot of these bands who are pumping out a lot of these really new, fresh sounds, a lot of it is really inspired from their either trips or their studies or their living experiences overseas. So I think a lot of these Korean artists are really tapping into global influences, weaving it into their sounds, but yet making it something distinctly, uniquely Korean. But with a little bit of an asterisk to it.
Well, what's going to happen at the Music Awards this week? I mean, aside from, you know, lots of boys throwing their shirts off.
Well, actually, when I looked at the nominee list, I don't think the shirt allergy guys were on many of the categories.
Now, why is that?
I think it's because mainly it was just during the voting period. A lot of these artists, for whatever reasons, didn't have albums that were currently in consideration. There are a few out there. But what's interesting is that the girl bands, I mean, they dominated last year, and again, they dominate this year. And so we have commercially successful who also got critical acclaim artists such as 21, Miss A, contending for some of the bigger categories.
Now, for example, 21, are there 21 girls in the group? Because, I mean, that is another Korean invention. I mean, the whole concept of, you know, normally sort of think of groups sort of, you know, no more than like three girls on stage, but no, like, no, have up to 10 if you want.
Yeah,
to.
I know. I wish there were 21 of them. No, it's actually a very fabulous foursome, and they each have their own very distinct personality, so they're easy to spot on screen and more importantly in a crowd. No, I think it might have to do with the fact that 21 may be an indication of maybe their age. I think they're all above age, so it's a safe kind of guilty pleasure to enjoy their music. But it's just the way they spell it, to the letter N, the letter E, and then one. It's just a very clever wordplay.
If you, you go around the malls, and I guess maybe not just in Korea, but you know, parts of California and Washington State and New Jersey and elsewhere, are there a lot of casting calls going on in Korean strip malls, etc.? Because just the level of manufacturing that goes on, it's like, you know, where is all this talent coming from? I mean, as I said, you know, there's a decent-sized global Korean community, which is not that big.
You are actually not far off the mark. Many of these top management companies do very regular auditions in major metropolitan cities like New York, like L.A., Toronto, Washington, D.C., wherever. So there are these auditions that are going on. On top of that, there are these very well-established talent shows that just cater to Korean and Asian American audiences. And then on top of that, just to make things even more interesting, is some of the highest rated TV shows in Korea are actually sort of these Korean versions of American Idol and Pop Idol. So you have all these platforms, all these opportunities, all these outlets to look for, discover, and hopefully find new talent.
Mm. Jay, just when you were talking at the start about just, you know, again, you know, the power of the internet to certainly propel these acts forward, are we talking about serious superstars? And you know, by this I mean able to charter jets themselves, and because, you know, when I look at the quality of let's say a video that's come out of this country, it reminds me of the of videos in the 80s. It seems that there's that kind of money, that level of production, which almost seems to have disappeared out of a lot of, let's say, you know, European and certainly American production. But I'm wondering, you know, because there aren't the album sales, because there's just not, you know, the cash or cash vehicle generations, and I'm wondering, you know, what kind of lifestyle are these Korean artists living?
Well, you know, Korea is one of the healthiest music market today, actually, which is very a big statement. I think globally, music market has been shrinking overall. Over here, it's just sort of like the beginning, really. I think globally,
I mean, the numbers, you know, are big, but I mean, I'm talking about really monetizing it.
Monetizing it. Basically, the difference between 20 years ago, let's say, is, you know, K-pop has always been here. Now we have the marketing, you know, we have the even the corporate backing to make it global. And I think that's what's going to really push it out the stratosphere. I think in the next few years, I think K-pop, hope for K-pop is that it will be one of the genres globally. Like, you know, there's Latin music. There's, you know, Europop. There's all different kinds of things. I want K-pop to be recognized as one of the global genres, and I think it's coming very soon.
And I think, you know, harping on the production value of the Korean music videos, I think what's very interesting about what the Korean music industry is doing with this particular art form is music videos at the end of the day are commercials. But back in the day, it used to be commercials just for the artists. But because these artist management companies have become savvier, many of them are getting product placement, corporate endorsements put into the mix. And so they can afford to make these big budget slick videos. And you mentioned the YouTube hits. You know, you may not sell a million records, but you could definitely get a million hits and then some. And some of these top artists, for them, a million, been there, seen it, done that. Can you do a million in 72 hours, 48 hours, 24 hours? And there are artists doing that. And what's interesting is that their management companies are not only getting those hits, they're monetizing those hits. So many of them have deals with YouTube so that the more views they get because they have advertising attached to it, that's a new revenue stream that they wouldn't have thought of otherwise. So what used to be a promotional vehicle has now become a new commercial opportunity. And so it's very interesting to see. I'm actually in many ways on a fan level. I love the fact that there are more Korean videos that are being made that are smarter, quirkier, or sexier. But more importantly is they've become new commercial opportunities in many ways for these Korean artists.
And on the new Korean artists, you've got another act for us.
Yes. They're basically, if I were to bet on who's going to win awards, unfortunately, I don't know if I would bet on this band because they're in such a competitive category in the Best Electronic and Dance Song of the Year category. They're up against many of the girl bands that we were talking about. But I love this band. They have a quirky name, quirky title, and a really, really funky sound. I think I described it earlier to Hugo as a slutty lounge music. But it's a band called Sultans of the Disco. And what I love about the name of the song is it's, you know, everyone knows and loves Saturday Night Fever. They've taken it to the next level. You're going to party hard, go all the way. So the track for this is called Sunday Night Fever from Sultans of the Disco.
Was Sultans of Disco with Sunday Night Fever. What will be the big hit? I mean, what's going to be sort of, you know, the sure win this week? Who's going to walk away and clean up the Korean Music Awards?
What's interesting to see is that the most nominated artists were actually artists that were from the indie music scene. So what's very interesting is the Korean Music Awards is always known for their eclectic selection of nominees. And what was really interesting this year is, yes, they recognized the super commercially successful acts, but they really gave a lot of the sort of indie artists a lot of nominations. So what's interesting is a lot of bands that got nominated are people that basically aren't on radio or on TV. So, for instance, there's a band called Nine in the Numbers who almost live up to their name because I think they almost got 9 nominations. There is a hip hop artist that, you know, I've seen, you know, coming up through the club ranks and boom, all of a sudden he's up for Song of the Year, Album of the Year, Hip Hop, Rap, Song, everything, Musician of the Year, a guy named Gaudion. And again, he's got a great song that's in the running. Number one's not good enough. The song that he's getting all the love from all the critics is called Ranking Zero. Like, how do you go one up on number one? He figured it out. What I love about some of these nominees is not only do they have great music, some of them just have great names. And so for me, the Korean Music Awards is a very exciting event because it's a great opportunity where the playing fields become very level, where music quality rather than pure record sales is really the indicator as to who's going to win and who's going to walk away with trophies.
Excellent. Bernie Cho, Jay, thanks very much for joining us in Culture Corner.
Thank you.
You're listening to Monocle Weekly in Seoul. Back after this. You're back with Monocle Weekly, where it's time to say goodbye to both Mr. Cho and Mr. McDonald. But before we go, final thoughts, reflections? Are we going to sort of stick to it that you're holding firm on who the winner is going to be at the Music Awards? Yes?
You know, every year I try to bet on winners like horses, and I fail miserably. So this year I've decided I'm going to hold back. Mm. But I do have some dark horse favorites, and I will be quietly rooting for them. But this year, all the nominees, I love them all. So I'm really happy that there was a diversity between the big acts, the small acts, and the unknown acts and the hopefully soon to be famous acts.
Mm. One thing, speaking of Korean spectaculars, when we were talking about what was happening north of the border, it was quite remarkable, the synchronized swimming display that happened in Pyongyang. And I wonder if that was sort of a deliberate snub. We were talking about sort of the growing naval capabilities out of the south that the North Koreans are saying, we can just put lots of people in a pool and they can do amazing acrobatics. And what do you make of that?
I saw that video and I can tell you, I'm sure there's a DJ somewhere out there thinking, if I recut that, that could make a great music video. So
it's almost as good as Girls' Generation.
Yes, yes. Their choreography is almost second to Girls' Generation. I'm just going to let them keep their crown because,
Well, I don't know if you saw the current issue, our fourth anniversary issue, in fact, where we do the whole reunification story. And one of the things when we talk about if there was a reunified Korea, we said that there would be a completely new genre because you would go to Pyongyang and you would start a challenger studio to all those Bollywood studios because, the Indian sort of, might have mastered for the moment making, considerable money with Bollywood flicks, but they'd have nothing on a studio in Pyongyang. Can you imagine? People from around the world would flock for mass choreography there.
And that being said, the great leader himself in North Korea is also known to be a huge film buff. So I think the facilities are actually there. It's just an issue of, will he let people from the outside rent those?
And I always want to know, of course, there are very, very slick PR people working in Pyongyang. Do they deliberately grain the video that comes out of there? Or do you think it's all shot on Super 8 still?
You know what? I have no idea.
Don't you think there is something about the quality of what comes out of Pyongyang? It's remarkable because it does look like it was shot in 53.
Vintage.
Yeah.
I actually think Professor Choi would have known that answer if we had stuck on and pushed him on that issue because he had a lot of really, really choice trivia facts. And that one.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I'm still a little bit. I've seen those Japanese Coast Guard cutters, tied up at various harbors around Japan. But whether they're anything for the Chinese to be scared about, I'm not quite sure. But we'll explore that when we do our show from Shanghai or Beijing, gentlemen. Thanks very much.
Thank you
for this week's edition of the Monocle Weekly. Today's show is produced by Alexander Mills, all the way over in London, and our sound engineer was Yunhee Park. If you have any thoughts or comments for today's show, then do drop us a note to weekly@monocle.com, and remember you can catch up with us daily via our Monocle column on our site, and also catch us, live and in person, or at least almost live, on our TV program on Bloomberg TV, which is also on our website and also on Bloomberg.com. Next week, we'll be coming to you from London. But for now, I'm Tyler Brulé.
I'm Bernie Cho.
I'm Hugo McDonald.
And here to play us out is Flow Sick, discovered by our earlier guest, Jay Chong. The track is Superstar. Let's get away from this city lights with nobody knows. Yeah, girl, I'm gonna take you there. Superstar sky high, got my hands in the air. And yeah, you can be my superstar. Girl, it shines tonight. Check. Yeah, yeah. Cause I'm an overnote, life short, like staccato. So tonight we pop bottle like there's no tomorrow. Do it real B.I.G. for the borrow. Smooth dress, fur coat, soaks to the Merlot. Hey, and guts the floors. Five-star horse with the tops cut off. Your wrist bring chills like the top up north. First place, these other chicks are not on course.
sky can't bird's eye view with the new spot and skyline high fly penthouse rooftop. And then I put diamonds on your ear, a game on money from every word you hear. Yeah, hope you know we hitting big green, NASDAQ screen, HD clean, big dreams. All eyes on the superstar, I make a wish here. We making moves this year, let's get it.
Let's get away from these city lights where nobody knows.
Yeah, girl, I'ma take you big. Superstar sky high, got my hands.